You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 467 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And also soon home of multiple teams training for the CONCACAF Club World Cup, but we'll get to that later. Let's start.
It's this episode 67. Do we have numbers for that?
Charles Cross is 67, right?
That's what I was thinking. But also, summer of 67, actually the summer of love. People confuse it a lot for the summer of 69. Because of Bryan Adams and Woodstock. Summer of 67 was the summer of love.
Also just because of 69, right? I mean, people like that element of it, don't they?
Sure. But people are wrong about things sometimes.
Joe Toledo, UW offensive lineman, only other 67 we have.
Calling it the summer of 69 would be like Greedo shooting first. But
that's a callback that you're not going to understand for some period of time.
You're not supposed to mention it.
Okay.
You leave it there. It's an Easter egg.
Oh. But you were saying this is if people would understand it.
I know. They're going to come back to the end, and then they're going to be like, whoa.
Are they? Are they going to be like, whoa?
I'm playing, you know, I'm like 4D level podcasting chess here. You're just playing checkers.
I despise nothing more than the chess, not checkers concept.
Nothing. Well, you come at the king, you best not miss.
Should we do our toast? Speaking of the king, congrats to UW men's crew on winning its 21st IRA national title on Sunday, repeating as champions after winning last year. UW men also won the James Ten Eich Memorial Trophy for overall points in the national championship regatta. So we learned some things looking this up. Someone asked on the Discord.
Yes, we.
Whether this is the highest percentage of national championships in any sport. And the answer is no, because they've been having crew for a long period of time, back to 1895, albeit with some interruptions for world wars, pandemics, only one pandemic, actually. They didn't take a break in 1918, but pandemics and the like. So it is not the highest concentration. The other thing I didn't realize is that it's the IRA national title because the NCAA does not actually sponsor men's crew. They sponsor women's crew, but not men's crew, which is organized by an outside body outside of the NCAA.
Is that like a historical thing? More than the NCAA not wanting to, it's just like it's been this way because it's been running for so long?
I think probably so, yes.
Okay, so you don't have any more about the history of men's crew?
I mean, they've won 21 national championships. That's
Wait,
a lot.
So who is the highest percentage?
In crew?
I
didn't go through an exhaustive research. I discovered that, you know, if you strictly count it to the NCAA women's basketball era, UConn has won 12 out of 43, which is a pretty higher percentage than 21 out of 100.
Gosh, that is a good team, huh?
Yeah. I did, again, exhaustive.
Newsworthy.
You know, that's the kind of insight you get here on the Pelton Cast.
Well, Oklahoma softball is not going to be that this year, huh?
No. Yeah, a major upside. I was watching that one when Texas Tech finished them off. Washington won it for the first time in 1923 when they became the first time team from the West Coast to do so.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were a big fan of that. Let me see here. Total IRA national championships. Cornell is still ahead of UW. Ever heard of it?
God damn it.
They have 26 national championships, but UW's coming for you, Cornell. Cal is third at 19, and then tied for fourth, Navy, Penn, and Wisconsin.
Honestly, beating Navy, it's a little bit like, you're asleep at the wheel, Navy.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. So when was the last
time? It's like how our university happens to be a lot faster than a certain university that's pretty closely aligned with running.
That is true. Cornell has not won since 1982, shortly after my birth, was the last time that Cornell won.
Wow.
So I like UW's odds of getting there at some point before too long.
Mark your calendars for 3 years from now.
Well, they're five ahead, so do not
Oh,
mark your
I thought they
calendars
were
for
only two
three.
ahead.
No, it's 26-21.
Mark your calendars for 6 years from now.
It has been a while since UW has won five total national championships. You'd have to go back to 2015 to find that, but they have now won. Or yeah, you'd have to go back to 2014, I should say. But they have now won three of the last five post-pandemic.
Okay.
So there you go. That's all. That's your details on IRA national championship history,
Yeah, we're
which.
mostly an IR.
I mean, look, UW is a men's crew school. We've always said
Absolutely.
it.
Absolutely. They were a softball school, but they're a men's crew school eternally. They've been a volleyball school at various times also.
Yeah.
Also, it's a track school right now.
Occasionally, even a football school, weirdly. They didn't
They
play the
will be.
national
They will
championship
be.
game a year ago.
I am so hyped for NCAA Football 26 coming. The because last year, I don't think players were editable, if I remember correctly. So obviously, if you could have edited players in NCAA 26, you know who would have been one of the best players in the game at quarterback. But this year, we're finally going. I nothing could live up to my own expectations, but having DeMond, who is actually DeMond in that game and as the starting quarterback, you know, like Will Rogers was nice, but like this is going to change things. It is going to be very fun playing with DeMond. Somebody was talking about Oklahoma might be the most played with school because of Metier, which again, I mentioned last week, is hilarious because he is also bad.
Well,
I'm the
sure.
only person who seems to be pointing this out. I'm the only person on earth who's like, yes, he's good, but also don't forget he's bad. Okay, get on to the next toast because I have thoughts.
Oh, good. Can't wait for that. Congrats to Randy Johnson, who will become the fourth player in Mariners history to have their jersey retired in 2026 after number 51 is previously retired for Ichiro this summer.
You can't retire a jersey twice.
I mean, you can actually.
The jersey is retired. It is the number that is retired. It's not the name and number combo. Because if it was the name and number combo, there would be many Yankees wearing number seven or whatever. All you would have to do is not find a player with that same last name. So if it's retired for 51 Ichiro, they would just have to find a player who was not named Ichiro and also wanted to wear 51. The jersey number is retired. Randy Johnson's 51 cannot also be retired in the way that Ichiro's 51 can be retired. The number can only be retired one time.
I don't think I agree with this logic.
How? How do you not agree with this logic? It is literally against what it is. Hey, you're the words matter person. The number is retired.
I mean, there are certain situations where you can retire the jersey and not retire the number. You can go the other direction.
I don't
So
know
I don't see why
what
you can
does
go
that
this direction.
mean then? How do you retire a jersey?
But if it's hanging in the rafters, it's retired, even if it
No,
continues to be
it's not
utilized.
retired. It's hanging in the rafters. What the fuck does that mean? It's retired. The person is retired from the sport, but like, there will never, like, they can have people with the last name Johnson again.
This is a very strange take.
It's not a strange take. This literally means nothing. And
You know,
here's the real take, though. Are you
your
ready for it?
occasional team, by the way, the Portland Trail Blazers, retired 30, I believe, simultaneously for both
That's
Bobby
fine.
Gross and Terry
No,
Porter.
that see, that is different. If this summer they were like, we're retiring 51 for Randy Johnson and Ichiro, totally fine.
Okay.
However, if
So
you're
this is, to be
retiring,
clear, not fine.
I mean, it's okay, here's my biggest issue with it. The real, this is not an Ichiro take. This has nothing to do with who it's for or whatever. This is not a perspective about either. I have two perspectives on this, however. And there was one that I mentioned this before, and I think you disagreed with me, but that
Just assume that I did.
it was from the Ringer Draft Show. They were talking about how rather than retiring numbers, which is ultimately stupid, they should have numbers that teams wear and have like a continuum of that. When you're the guy,
Right. So it's like
then you get to be that
Syracuse
number.
number 44 Wait, was it 30 or 44? Yeah, is there running backs like dating back to and possibly preceding Jim Brown? West Virginia at number 44 was like this. They had their stars were at Jerry West and Rod Thorne in basketball for a period of time.
They should have a way, like some sort of threshold that you have to hit or whatever, a certain like number of MVP voting or something, right? The previous season. Then you can choose to be that number for a team. Then it's an honor to be that number. And so rather than the Mariners, who two of the best players of all time both happen to wear the number 51, then it could be like this is a thing for the Mariners, the number 51. Obviously, I think other Bernie Williams is 51 also, right?
For
But
the Mariners?
no, not for the Mariners. I'm just saying it's not like it's just uniquely a Mariners. Like other people have worn 51. It's kind of a number. But the that
It's definitely a number. It is without question a number.
you know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying.
40, no successful players ever worn the number 49 before.
I mean, I suppose. I don't think Bernie Williams is quite as notable a player as you're making him out to be here.
Well, I'm sure there are other ones that I can't think of, but the for the Mariners, so last year, let's say, right, Cal Raleigh maybe makes the All-Star game 3 years in a row or whatever. You can then be number 51. You've achieved this honor of getting that number. That is how a number should be treated, rather than this insane thing of we're retiring it for this person and we're retiring it for this person. What they are doing is not retiring Randy Johnson's number 51. They're hanging a Randy Johnson jersey with the number 51 in the rafters or whatever. That's what they're doing,
I
literally,
mean,
right?
what I would say is to your broader point, I think that is what the Mariners did with number 51 for Randy Johnson. Like, if it had just been, some guy gets traded to the team and asked to wear 51, it would not have happened. Ichiro, I believe, if I read this correctly in the story, like wrote Randy Johnson a letter asking permission to wear it, and obviously the Mariners knew who Ichiro was going to be, or had an idea of who Ichiro was going to be. They didn't know that he was going to be, a Hall of Famer necessarily, but they knew that he was going to be a notable player, and that's part of why they were willing to reissue this in a way that they haven't with other numbers that they would have considered eventually retiring.
My second argument here, yes, that's true, was if they were good
Okay.
at marketing.
Would you like to guess all-time leaders in WAR among players who have worn the number 51?
I mean, I'd probably Randy Johnson and Ichiro.
Randy Johnson's number one. Ichiro is number two. Number three wore it only for, is a rookie, is not associated with the number at all. His rookie season was 1995. He is famous for his roles with the he famously played for the Yankees, but after playing more famously with another team.
Was it Manny wore 51?
No.
Oh.
Did he
Oh,
play
he
for the
never played for the
Yankees?
Yankees. No.
Another AL East team he more famously played for and associated with, but debuted with the Kansas City Royals in 1995.
With the Royals in 95?
Played the same position as Bernie
Oh,
Williams
Johnny
and
Damon.
outwore him. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Number four is Chris Sale.
Okay.
Is wearing it currently for the Atlanta Braves. Because this is at any point in your career. It'd be more interesting, I suppose, if you did wore solely wearing the number, because then I
Yes.
think Bernie Williams would, in fact, be third on this list, having done so for presumably all 16 of his seasons. Number five on the list, a teammate of both Randy Johnson and Ichiro with the Seattle Mariners,
Really?
who wore a very similar number for a long period of time in Seattle, but not 51. Because
I'm never
Randy
going to get
Johnson already
this.
had it. Jamie Moyer.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so the Mariners, right? They have number one and two at 51. They had an opportunity for themselves. And this is why I'm saying it's a marketing issue. Because the reason that the Mariners are doing this, of course, the Randy Johnson retirement, is to sell tickets to that game,
Trevor
right?
Hoffman, by the way, is the other most notable Met
Oh, yeah, Trevor
51.
Hoffman.
He
Yeah, I
wore it
hear
his
from
entire
Trevor Hoffman.
career.
So it's like a notable-ish number, right? That's enough good players. Go look who the most successful players who are 49 was. But they're doing this to this like I don't believe in like grander motives of sports teams, right? Honoring Randy Johnson, that's fucking
Of
bullshit.
course.
That means nothing. They're trying to sell tickets to they'll probably make it a weekend, a game, a weekend, whatever. And they're trying to sell tickets to those games for people from our generation who want to see Randy Johnson speak, whatever, give him his moment. It's a marketing thing. They screwed up when Ichiro left by not being like, instead, I don't like this, like,
they should have retired Johnson's number, Randy's number first.
No, they should have done what I'm telling you about in the lineage thing and been like, we went from Randy Johnson to Ichiro. Who's next? Who's going to earn this, right? This number. And it can't be given like every year somebody is this number,
right?
Because I feel like it's an honor you have to have earned that and played good enough. Because there are some Mariner seasons where it's like Jose Lopez doesn't need to be the 51 right now. You know what I mean?
I agree. Also, players may not always want to be 51.
Or again, if you want to, but if you build it up well enough, it's an honor, right? It's like a thing that you want to be. Soccer does this very well, right? Soccer has those numbers that are like, this is the number that you are. You know, like if you're number 10, right? Like that is a number that matters. So
weirdly, Chris Sale and Jamie Moyer also at the top of the list for number 49.
49, really?
Having both worn that.
Was Moyer doing it for his age?
No, he wore it with the Cubs when he, I assume, first debuted in 1986. Among players who actually wore it the bulk of their career, Ron Guidry, the greatest 49, followed by Tom Candiotti and Charlie.
Can't believe I didn't come up with that.
And so, Tim Wakefield, a lot of knuckleballers wore 49.
They had a long-term marketing opportunity because you can market that. You could be like every year somebody earns it. You'd be like, this year, Julio is our 51. Right.
I don't know about every year, but I guess I see what you're saying, that it could be like
it's a thing. If they built it up as a thing,
present them with the 51 jersey.
They chose a finality rather than choosing the future. You know what I mean?
Every team chooses that, but
no, they chose wrong. And that is my second piece of the argument, which is be more creative with what you do to honor players. How have baseball teams only been like, there's two options? You make a statue, you retire the number.
I mean,
you
have like also the Mariners Hall of Fame.
A Hall of Fame. There's like three. These things, it is so within the vertical. And I was thinking about this of like, what would the Savannah Bananas do? Maybe they do something like that. But there's so many better ways to honor players, right? Like, what if it's like the Randy Johnson section, whatever? You know what I mean? Section, I don't think they go up to 51 or whatever, but section 151 is now the Randy Johnson section of T-Mobile Park. Right? Like there's parts of the ballpark that you could actually use to like honor these players, right? Edgar's Cantina, that matters, something like that. You're talking about Edgar Martinez when you talk about that cantina forever, right? And they have all these opportunities, but instead what they choose is these little things. You could still have a weekend to be like, we're honoring this person by doing this thing on this day. Randy Johnson will come speak. It'll be Randy Johnson Day. The retiring the number is literally just doing the same thing that everybody else does. And in this case, it means absolutely nothing because the number is already retired.
I think that, look, these things are all symbols. Okay. Nothing means anything in and of itself. And the symbol of the weekend, the honoring Randy Johnson is what matters more so than whether the jersey is not worn by future players wearing that numbers. So I think you've taken the point much too literally, I guess, is where I'm at with this.
Okay, Luca just texted me. He's in a Seattle history. This is a bonkers list right now. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Oh, I see.
Well, great audio. Great audio.
I'm reading a text. Hold on. Okay, so Luca's in a class right now, which is like the history.
Texting during the class?
Yeah. This is middle school. It happens. They're talking about history of Seattle music in his class. And he got a list. He texted me a list. Best Seattle bands.
Best? We're sure it's best. It's a photo?
He said, pick them. Oh, he picked them for his project.
Oh, I see.
So maybe he had an option of like bands. I guess maybe the teacher gave this list of bands and the kids could pick from them.
Okay.
To be on it, which is incredible that I've managed two of them. But these are the best Seattle bands as listed by Mr. Miller and Miss Spencer at Lucas School. Not to call them out, because this is a bonkers list that they have. We have the Gits, Arthur and You, if you remember them.
No.
Kenny G.
Oh. Do you remember?
Pickwick.
Okay.
Enumclaw, a Seattle band. This is Tacoma Erasure. Them.
Huh.
See, I don't. I'm shocked that that made the list, but okay, I'm here for it. Luca picked them. Seaweed, Fastbacks, Sonics, also
Luca.
famously a Tacoma band.
Luca's a Nepo baby, you know?
Queensryche, Yumin, Malfunction, In Hyphen, and Ivan and Alyosha, the Christian rock band.
So they were like, were they going for obscure bands
I
from
guess
Seattle?
so.
I have many questions.
The Seattle region, like, there's a few of these. I'm most fascinated by Kenny G's inclusion in this list.
The Kenny G made the cut, and Sir Mix-a-Lot, who Pablo Torre couldn't find in time. They were like, no,
Well,
too
clearly, Sir
famous.
Mix-a-Lot would have been eligible because Tacoma is just Seattle, according to Mr. Miller and Miss Spencer.
Well, I look, we are not the ones to be talking about geography.
I'm going to text Aramis and be like, yo, bro, they said you're from Seattle. That is an incredible list to have gotten. Anyway, happy to have two artists make the list.
All right, lastly in toast this week, congrats to Cal Raleigh, named AL Co-Player of the Week. After hitting .348 with 6 home runs and 10 RBI, he shared the award with Tampa Bay infielder Junior Caminero, who hit .379 with 4 home runs and 13 RBI. And I don't see how these lists are equivalent, especially because, like, if Tampa Bay had gone 6-0 or 6-1 or something, I would get it. They were like .500 in the week. Cal had an amazing week. He deserved to be sole player of the week. But I am sure we will talk about more about him when that time comes, which will probably be very soon. All right, with that, it is time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Just over a week ago, last Tuesday night, when Cal hit home runs in two of his first three at-bats against the Nats and came up again for another at-bat in the bottom of the sixth, I said, for the first time since 1993, the greatest honor a baseball player can get. He's up. I didn't have to say who. I didn't have to say the situation. Everyone in the house knew who and why I was calling. A few days later, he'd hit another two against the Twins in a loss and won each in the next two games, again, for a cool four across three games to tie Shohei Ohtani for league lead, passing Aaron Judge. It is a core memory for me. I'm sure you remember this as well. During Griffey's 8-game home run streak, when our childhood best friend's dad, Paul Rotty, said those exact words to us. We ran in the room. Bang! That was probably Griffey's sixth or seventh home run in a row. But he's up was it. That's the phrase that gets said only when someone is truly experiencing greatness. And for the first time since Griffey in Seattle, has a hitter for the Mariners entered that place. They've had amazing hitters before, but with a 63 home run pace into June, this is different. This is something special, which we should not take for granted. This, for the first time, is the most fun hitter on the Mariners since Ken Griffey Jr., and we should always be paying attention when he's up.
Yeah, it sounds right that it was probably around game six or seven that we really started to take note of the streak, and it was every single at bat became appointment viewing. I was lucky enough, we'll talk a little more about this later, to attend Saturday's game and see another home run from Cal in the midst of this run, in this Player of the Week run.
Do you have
And
something in your mouth?
yeah.
I can't see. We're podcasting here. I don't know. I take this seriously. I don't know about you.
I didn't know that you could hear it.
It sounds like you're chewing. God, this is look, if you want to know, if you want to study how to become the MVP, maybe a little bit of video. I'm here animatedly talking to a screen that is a square and has a lock in the middle right now. Some of us are competing. I managed to eat my food when I wasn't podcasting. Anyway, you were there on Saturday. We'll hear more about that later.
It's a little busier for me this morning.
Is it? The MVP is speaking right now.
Oh God. Wow.
You rather be head of state or would you rather be MVP?
Probably MVP, I gotta say, of those choices. Yeah, I mean, he is on an incredible run here, and it's not like these are a bunch of cheap home runs or something. There's all sorts of stats about, was it Tom Murphy that had a stretch where he hit home runs in several consecutive games, if I remember that correctly?
I believe, nah, maybe it was Tom Murphy.
But this is not that. This is Cal is just like having a season that is up there with Judge and Otani, and it's incredible to watch. And he has carried the Mariners in this stretch here, as we've been talking about, where the rest of the lineup, Jorge Polanco is ice cold right now. The back end of the lineup getting real rough. And the starting pitching has not always been as consistent as you want it to be. And Andrés Muñoz, and over the weekend, was not as consistent as you wanted it to be. The Mariners had three consecutive blown saves in the ninth inning and won two of the three games. And Cal, the single biggest driver in that success.
It's gotten to the point that if I see that the Mariners, because I wasn't able to watch, again, as documented by the fields that I said that I was at all weekend, I was only able to watch, I guess I watched Friday and Saturday for the most part, but was at a lot of children's sports. But if I see a run go up where it's like it's 1-0 or it was 1-1 and now it's 2-1 or whatever, I assume it's a Cal Raleigh homer.
Yeah, that's probably the logical position.
Which is, again, it is like a truly unprecedented place to be. I mean, he's now more than double than anybody else on the team. And, this team that still hits homers, right? But what he's doing, we'll see whether it holds up. It doesn't matter. But it's just in this moment right now, and especially for a catcher. Like, it is a completely unprecedented season for a catcher. It's just the feeling, though. And that's it. That's what I was thinking about. Whereas, like, I'm watching Cal Raleigh, and it is the only time I remember since watching Ken Griffey Jr., that I'm like, he's gonna hit a homer here. Whether he does or doesn't, I just have that feeling. And that is ridiculous.
It is the highest honor that you can bestow on a baseball player, much higher than retiring their jersey.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I was thinking about this. I was like, some people would maybe argue that, like, during the single or the all-time hit streak, people would have felt this way. But it's like, if you can argue that, but if we're being honest with ourselves right now, it's not the same. Seeing somebody get a hit and most likely a single is not the same as somebody coming up and being on pace for being at 60 plus jacks into June.
Chicks dig the long ball. What else can you say? So also Saturday, highlighted by the MLB debut and Mariners debut of 2022 first round pick Cole Young, who was pulled off the field mid-game on Friday night in Tacoma in anticipation of being called up, started at second base, ended the game with a walk-off fielder's choice that scored pinch runner Miles Mastroboni in the 10th inning. Now, his hit on Saturday in his debut, the only one through his first 10 at-bats over his first three games, was hitting .277 with an .853 OPS at Tacoma and won't turn 22 until the end of July. So,
He's
well ahead of schedule.
got time. Has he struck out that much? Right? How many strikeouts does he have? Oh, yeah. Just one strikeout in those 10 at bats. I'm assuming that's plate appearances also. I don't know if he's walked. He's walked one time. Okay. So one strikeout. Oh, never mind. He has three strikeouts. That's one walk. That's striking out more than I would have guessed, actually. It's going to be an adjustment to major league hitting for Cole Young. But having that moment, and I was thinking about this, I got texted by somebody who literally could probably not name a single other Mariner, but the video of Cole Young getting called up, and you just see him, and he's so excited about playing in the majors. And it's one of those stories where you're like, this is it right here. Like, this is the thing that we're actually way better at documenting now than we used to be, those moments. And
Oh,
it's like,
yeah.
this is why we like baseball. Seeing Cole Young have this opportunity in this moment. And we've gotten to do that a few times this year, which is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it was awesome to be able to see, say you're at his first game,
Oh,
just
I
in
told
case.
Luca when he was going, I was like, this is the most awesome thing. I'm trying to think of major league debuts that we were at. And like, I probably forgotten over time. I know that we were at Ken Cloud's major league debut.
Not forgetting that one. A-Rod debuted on the road, so we obviously weren't at that one, and Griffey was before our time as Mariners fans.
I
So,
feel like it was like start three of Felix that we went to or something.
yeah, it was early, but it was definitely not his debut. I
We've
have the
looked and
ticket.
found that day.
Having recently moved, I have the ticket.
But those are like, we'll see what Cole Young develops into. But even if he doesn't become a star, like being at somebody's major league debut is always a fun moment. And the Mariners did a great job of documenting it. I have to
Yes.
give them 100%. I'm criticizing them with the marketing for, again, all they're capable of doing is jumping into a vertical. Other people have done this, and that's the thing that I don't like, which is just like you're doing enough. But
Well, you want to give them credit, and I do think the Mariners are very good at marketing, generally speaking. Their Pride Month commercial, Baseball Belongs to Everyone. I don't know if you saw this on
I
social.
haven't seen this.
Mina shared it among others, but I know that you're not very active on social, but like they knocked it out of the park with this one.
I'm not active on old person social.
Okay, fair.
You're not very active on social is not a thing that should be said to me.
Okay, that's a valid point. Text-based social. Did you, by the way, did you see the Winklevoss quote?
No.
It was something about referring to at the crypto conference that we're literally in the first inning, and we know that it's going to overtime.
What? Weren't they rowers?
Yes.
I
You
they
feel
just
like I
can't
should
you
know the
can't pay attention
metaphors.
to any other. I feel like maybe they just misspoke. I don't mean to give any
That's a
amount of
little too
credit to a
generous.
Winklevoss,
That's
but
a
like,
little
come
too generous.
on. I guarantee you that a Winklevoss has seen a football game or a baseball game.
No, maybe not. I don't know if Harvard baseball is a big thing. Harvard Yale, I know, is a thing.
Oh my
Anyways, that
God.
is not what we are here to discuss. Some other Mariners news. Logan Evans got sent down Wednesday after the best start of his career, shortly after he
That
recorded.
was a harsh toke. That was
Yes, it was.
baseball is a difficult sport.
I mean, baseball roster management is difficult, I think, is the biggest thing to make room for Bryce Miller's return and the Mariners' rotation nearing full strength, seven aces. Logan Il Gilbert made his first rehab start for the Rainiers last Thursday, going 1 2/3 innings before hitting his 45 pitch limit and told Adam Jude he felt good health wise coming out of that appearance. He's expected to make at least one more rehab start this week before a potential return to complete the rotation for the first time this season.
I'm gonna give you a we'll see on the seven aces. Because for now, sorry, George, demoted from ace.
Oh, wow. Oh,
We've had
tough
enough
feud.
starts. We have
Emerson
had enough
Hancock
starts.
is ahead
You have
of
to
George
earn
Kirby in the ace rankings.
and Logan Evans.
I mean, I wasn't disputing Logan Evans.
That you were like, yep, checks out. You have to
Innings,
earn it
one run
back,
in his last
George.
start.
You don't get honorary ace status.
George Kirby leaving the field bleeding after being hit by a line drive that turned out into the third out to get him out of a bit of a jam in the fifth inning.
The bigger
Tough
question
to
is,
see.
okay, here are the five aces.
Oh, God.
Logan gets it despite being injured because he was pitching at ace level. Woo, obviously. Castillo, yes. Logan
Best start
Evans,
for him
of
on Sunday
course.
with the bat bullpen just completely wiped out after three consecutive 10th inning games, two of which turned out disastrously.
I think we might
Or
be
10 plus
only
inning
four
games.
aces if you're ace counting status right now. I think it's Woo, Castillo, Gilbert, and Evans. Just like we predicted.
A delightful list. In other
I'll keep
Mariners.
updating ace status. Let's keep doing that.
It's going to
Number
be
of
Ace
aces. The
Watch.
Mariners are at four right now. They may get back to seven. We'll see.
Now it sounds like you have something in your mouth. We'll come up with an Ace Watch graphic, and then the players will be grayed out when they are not currently aces, I
That's
suppose.
you should do that for real.
No, I don't think we should. I don't
Ace
know if
watch.
it's something people will like. Jackson
It's for the
Kowar.
Discord. Come on.
I know. Jackson Kowar returned to an MLB mound for the first time since 2022 last week, acquired by the Mariners that offseason. Kowar suffered a UCL tear in 2024 spring training, underwent Tommy John surgery before ever pitching in a regular season game for the Mariners. So exciting to see him back.
I was going to ask if you thought that we should post the AL Rivals on Blue Sky,
Possibly so,
or
yes.
do you feel like people won't get it?
It's a little late now for Rivalry Week, but it's still probably a good idea.
Okay, sounds good. Podcast social marketing,
Text-based social.
text base. That's where the Pelton cast really thrives.
I mean,
Photos of teriyaki
the Cal
and.
Raleigh tweet did not, or Blue Sky post did not get a lot of traction, sadly.
Is Blue Sky still like, is it still cranking?
It's still active.
Do you feel like it's getting like progressively bigger?
Not really, other than the day when Twitter was down and there was an influx of new people.
I felt like, but like, if you were to look at the two trends, again, your argument is that people look too much at trends and not much at overall user base or whatever, but it's
Well,
still
for
pretty
social media,
positive
I think trends
trend-wise.
is more important because not actual trends, but the or threads, I guess it's not trends. Trends is not as important because is more important because it's so much about kind of the tipping point of user base. But I don't
I
think we're
still think
that
they're
much
probably
closer to it.
close. You don't think so?
Not
I mean,
as compared to
it's
three.
on the, it's like in the game now. Yeah, they're literally in the first inning and they're going to get to overtime.
Exactly. All right, let's get into the roundup, starting with the Kraken, who have a head coach. Finally, they
Oh.
hired former New York Islanders coach Lane Lambert. Most recently, the associate head coach for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Lambert took over the Islanders for the 2022-23 campaign, reached the playoffs, but was fired in January 2024. He was a 6-year NHL vet from 1983 to 1989, who has specialized in the penalty kill as an assistant coach. The Maple Leafs ranked fourth in that category last season. Lambert previously won the Stanley Cup as an assistant with the Washington Capitals in 2018. Tristan, based on your knowledge of the NHL coaching pool, what do you think of this hire?
You know, I think it's a pretty solid hire for the Kraken. They went out there and they found one of the best names on the market. And, you know, the focusing in on the penalty kill is really important. That was a place the Kraken really needed some help. So I personally am pretty excited about this hire. I feel like, you know, we can expect big things from the Kraken for these next couple of seasons.
I believe I did not put this in notes. I believe the Kraken were 27th in the penalty kill last season. So certainly room for improvement there. I thought this was interesting from Kate Shefty's story in the Seattle Times about the hire. GM Jason Botterill denied rumors that the Kraken had offered the job to anyone else and that any coaching candidates were put off by the Kraken's insistence on keeping Jessica Campbell on staff. As the coaching search stretched into May, there were rumblings that Philadelphia Flyers coach Rick Tocchet had spurned the Kraken. As it approached a month, there was concern that potential suitors wanted to bring all their own people in, no holdovers. So, not a great sign when you have to deny that, I would say, whether it is in fact true or not.
I
I
don't
do.
know if I agree with that. I mean, it's a little bit of like they're defending their people, you know what I mean? Like they have people that they want to be on the staff
But
and
that's not what
they.
they denied. They denied that candidates were put off by it. So.
I don't, I guess we don't know whether the it's not the Kraken's job to tell whether candidates were put off or not.
But when you deny, you are telling it.
They weren't. I think it's a very strange thing to respond to. They don't know why candidates
That's,
didn't take the job.
I mean, they might, but it is part of the, that's what I'm saying, is the response to it is
Is
troubling.
there not like an element of sexism here? Like, am I just ignoring that? Because
I don't think it's sexist to want to bring in your own coaching staff. No, I mean that certainly can be a concern. I also like how many coaches are actually in position where they're choosing between multiple jobs is a different story. Like Rick Tocchet, like the denial there is reported related to it was reported. I want to say it was Elliot Friedman, but I forget who it was now, that he had specifically been offered the Kraken job before taking the Flyers job. I do think Jason Botterill is probably using some semantics here to be like that they hadn't offered it to anyone else, that it, you know, it wasn't technically an offer, but it was known that he could have the job if he wanted. I have no reason to distrust that reporting. But Tocchet, like, I don't think that was the reason he didn't take the job. And I don't think that the Kraken were the only other team that were interested in hiring him that didn't enter it, hire him, if that makes sense.
yeah,
So, and the other candidates, I don't know. Who cares?
I
You know,
agree.
the people asked for thoughts on the Discord. The real answer is hockey coaches probably don't matter.
Okay. Maybe nothing matters.
Peltoncast
I
nihilism.
just the idea that like these back-to-back stories, I'm just really starting to wonder if maybe the owners of some of these teams aren't great people.
It's not back-to-back stories because we're about to get into that part of it.
Oh my God.
A very confusing podcast. All right, well, let's talk quickly about the Sounders because I think this one is an important update. Not so much for the games they played last week, although
Phew,
we'll
thank
mention
God.
this. Here's just for our
Okay.
open to
Oh.
Sounders goal account is the Sounders got full points in a subpar performance Wednesday, beating San Diego FC 1-0. It was the
There's a
first
San Diego
Sounders.
team? This is a good bit, by the way. Because they're of not knowing that certain teams exist in MLS, but also I definitely did not know that there was a San Diego team. What are they called?
Well, the
Just San
Sounders
Diego
previous,
FC?
just San Diego FC. The Sounders did play them previously in the season, and obviously we talked about them on last week's podcast. So it's a classic Tristan move,
I told you
classic MVP.
the MVP has to rest for a few plays.
It was the first Sounders win with fewer XG than their opponent since 2022. Process that. They were outshot 16-6, and although five of the six shots were put on goal, they totaled just 0.4 XG, but managed to maintain a clean sheet despite center back Kim Keehee leaving in the 34th minute with a calf injury, replaced by rookie Stuart Hawkins, with starter Yoimez Gomar Andrade rehabbing a hamstring injury, and usual partner Jackson Reagan still limited his minutes coming back from injury. Those absences affected the Sounders much more on Sunday when they let in three goals in an 8-minute span against Minnesota United in their first home loss this season. Sounders actually scored during that busy stretch too, with UW product Kalani Kosa-Rienzi netting his second goal this season. Pulled back another on an own goal in the 83rd minute, but couldn't find the equalizer and a deserved loss based on XG 2.1 to 1.3. But the bigger news was before the game when players entered the pitch wearing Club World cash grab t-shirts to protest the distribution of the team's appearance fee for the FIFA Club World Cup starting now in less than 2 weeks. The minimum payout Sounders will get is 9.55 million, with additional money available based on performance. FIFA stipulates that a portion of that must go to players, but not how much. And MLS has told players that the league's collective bargaining agreement caps payment for additional tournaments at 1 million, barely 10% of the minimum. In a statement, the MLSPA,
So 1 million will be split. The team will get 9.55 million minimum.
at least, yes. And the
Is
players
this,
will
does
get a
this go to the
maximum of
team
1
or does this
million.
go to MLS?
Unclear on that part of the issue.
But at least
ML,
some is going to the team. It's not like MLS
the
just gets.
majority will go to the team. And the FIFA does stipulate it has to go to club operations. So essentially, you'd have to reinvest it in the roster or by some mechanism.
But they can't even
Or
spend more on the roster, can they? I guess maybe they can with
designated
designated
player.
players beyond.
In a statement, the MLSPA said the MLSPA and all MLS players stand united with the Seattle Sounders players who tonight demanded a fair share of the FIFA Club World Cup prize money. The statement turned the CBA clause, quote, out of date and said it ignores, quote, longstanding international standards on what players typically receive from FIFA prize money in global competitions. And, you know, essentially the 1 million cap was set at a period of time where, you know, the team, it's a 50% minimum up to a maximum of 1 million. And most of these.
Why would you set a max? I mean, I know why you would set a maximum.
Exactly.
Look, I understand, but
But
why
here's
would
the
the
thing.
is this a collectively bargain? Are the is there a CBA for MLS players?
Yes, that's why it's said twice, the
Okay.
CBA.
Why would they collectively bargain agree? They were just like, we can't imagine a tournament that they would get paid more than 2 million or what? I don't know what the percentage is, I
I mean,
guess,
this is
but.
buried deep in the clauses here, but here's the thing. If there is any league in the world, and I say this as someone covering the WNBA, where they just make shit up as they go. It is MLS, where the rules are completely fluid and change mid-season all the time. So the idea that here, of all places, no, we have found a place where we must stick with the rules, that is fucking bullshit from MLS.
We know why.
We do know why. But worse yet, Sounders majority owner Adrian Hauner responded to the protest with a, quote, profanity-laced post-game address to players in the locker room,
Oh, fuck
as first
that.
reported by
Oh
Sounder
my
Report.
God.
And
Oh,
that is unacceptable. Like, there's been a
I
lot of
will say this.
criticism.
There are a lot of places to play soccer in the world. This is not the only place to play soccer. There are more
Great
places to
point.
play soccer in the world than any other sport.
A great point.
I would be out of that. I would be, I don't know what they could do in soccer. I'd be requesting a trade immediately. Immediately if you were yelled at by the owner by asking for fair wages. It's fucked up.
More requests, more on-trade requests coming up. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism of the Sounders as an organization for the team's performance, which I think is preposterous. It is completely ridiculous. It is unbelievably entitled from Sounders fans who have no concept of the reality that the rest of us are living in. But this is the the worst misstep in the history of the Sounders franchise, in my opinion. So I would like to see an apology from Adrian Hanauer. Until then, I don't feel like I really want to be spending money with the Sounders at this point, buying tickets. So, yeah. Against that backdrop, the Sounders played their last
God,
MLS
it's almost
game.
like you can't even trust millionaires anymore.
Against that backdrop,
I
the
was trying to
Sounders.
find Adrian Hanauer's net worth.
It's not that substantial. I mean, the Sounders are the bulk of his wealth. Against that backdrop, the Sounders play their last MLS game prior to the Club World Cup Sunday, visiting Vancouver. The Sounders and everybody else in the West is looking up at the Whitecaps, who have a league best plus 15 goal differential, or second overall in MLS with 32 points. Sounders are 6 points back in a tie for fourth with the Timbers, who have a match in hand. All right, we conclude the roundup with Seattle Reign FC back from an international break. Friday, they will visit. They're also playing a team in San Diego, although you know about this one.
Oh
It's the
yeah.
hated San Diego
Oh.
Wave, our fierce
Wave.
rivals. The Wave are second in the NWSL standings. I don't know why I can't speak anymore. The Wave
Probably
are
because you're eating
second.
a four-course meal while you're doing this podcast.
I'm no longer eating. Just have no video. Wave are second.
Hollandaise sauce all over your lips.
I've
Wonder
retired
why
from
I can't podcast for.
the. It's actually peanut butter. Elimbo. The Wave are second in the NWSL standings with a plus 9 goal differential, unbeaten in their last six matches, winning five of those. But the Reign have dominated this matchup with five wins in seven all-time regular season meetings. Seattle Storm,
Hello.
a newsy Wednesday for the organization, starting with news first reported by Christina Williams that backup center Lee Yarou's representation has formally requested a trade. The background here appears to be, so I don't know if we discussed this on the pod, but it was previously reported that Lee was planning not to participate in the FIBA Asia Cup for China and would stay with the Storm through the season. And it seems that part of that agreement hinged on the idea that Lee was going to be playing enough in the WNBA to further her development for other competitions for the China national team, and that there is some concern about the fact that she has not been playing as much after playing a lot to the start of the at the start of the season. It is very clearly a crowded Storm front court with Neko Gumeke and Ezi Magbegor as starters who have been all stars, the number two overall pick in Dominic Malunga, and then Lee. So, there's been periods where Malunga, I believe Lee got a DNP against the Aces. Malunga Servia is the backup center in that one. They've liked Lee against bigger post players like Tierra McCowan for Dallas, but there's not always going to be one of those matchups for her. So it does seem that it's possible that Lee might be able to find more playing time somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, this is just an obvious trade.
I don't know if it's obvious because I do think the Storm really liked the idea of having that bigger post player, but it does seem plausible that there could be a bigger role out there for Lee somewhere else. What the Storm would get out of that trade remains unclear. So, we'll see. We'll monitor this situation. I don't know. The leverage is probably that she just again leaves for the FIBA Asia Cup or potentially leaves altogether if China is unwilling to let her continue playing in the league. But that doesn't necessarily mean the Storm need to make a bad trade for the sake of making a trade here. The other story, Christina Williams also reported Wednesday morning that there was a WNBA and C league security investigation into the Seattle Storm coaching staff on the heels, of course, of the external ex independent investigation into the allegations of bullying and harassment against the Storm coaching staff over the offseason. So it was later clarified. We have an ESPN story from my colleagues, Michael Vopel and Alexa Philippou, out there now that. The specific allegation is that a member of the Las Vegas Aces alleged that a member of the Storm coaching staff used profanity toward them in the post-game handshake line after Sunday's game in Seattle, won by the Aces. A league source who spoke to ESPN did not term it an investigation, termed it something that the league, quote, looked into, and that nothing has come of looking into it at this point. So it does seem like the initial report sort of overstated the magnitude of what was actually going on here and made it seem, much more a continuation of the previous story. So You'll recall that investigation over the offseason did not validate allegations of bullying and harassment made by Jewel Lloyd against the Storm coaching staff. So we move on. Let's talk about what happened on the court. It was not a great week for the Storm. When we last recorded, they were coming off a feel-good loss at Minnesota. We're at 3-2, and we were feeling like potentially much improved from last year. Friday night, they lost at home to the Atlanta Dream, a game they led comfortably by double digits at halftime and then really got badly outplayed in the second half of that one. Sunday, they were down big at halftime to the Aces, mounted a fourth quarter comeback, was able to get to the point where they had the ball down three in the closing seconds. A play where, Noel Quinn said they were going for the best shot available, ended up with a dump in to Malunga in the post in the final seconds, where she missed a turnaround two-pointer trailing by three. And then the Aces made their free throw. Storm never got a chance to tie it again. Tuesday, they struggled against the Dallas Wings without Paige Bueckers, were down again by nine at halftime, rallied in the second half, a much stronger performance after halftime, did get the win against the Wings to get back to 500. But we are starting to see, I would say, some of the concerns about the Storm's ability to score without Jewel Lloyd, coming into play now, as the offense has not been what it was over the first five games of the season, with Skylar Diggins really playing at a high level in that span. Diggins, in particular, the last couple of games combined 20 points, 11 assists, 10 turnovers. The Storm are going to need her to play at a much higher level offensively, I think, if they're going to succeed at that end of the court. The bright side is Gabby Williams has been just awesome. She's draining threes all of a sudden, which was always kind of the biggest question mark about her game. Continuing to be, a playmaker for the Storm, get to the basket and finish there, wreak havoc defensively. She has now, I think I would say, been the Storm's best player this season, which is pretty exciting to see. Ezzie Magbegor is the other player who has slumped at the start of the season. I mentioned this on Blue Sky. It's a rather bizarre stat. She's now 5 of 16 from the free throw line this season. That's as many as she missed in 87 attempts last year when she shot in the high 80s percentage-wise from the line. She's under barely over around 35% this season. So it's really kind of perplexing to understand that shooting last year was kind of out of the line with her career norms. I'd say she's more in the 70 to 80 range, but certainly not what we've seen so far this season. She had a better game against Dallas, had five blocks all in the first half, and then was an offensive threat after halftime. We sort of saw what we needed from her. We also continue to see the development of Dominique Malunga. Played the entire fourth quarter instead of Ezzie against the Aces because she was, having such success there. Showed the ability to switch out on Chelsea Gray and forced her into a very difficult jumper that Chelsea Gray made in a real callback to the 2022 semifinal series between these two teams. And then Asia Wilson made another extremely difficult jumper against her. But, these are all stars, in one case, the three-time MVP playing against a 19-year-old rookie. It's very exciting that, she's just able to put them in difficult positions, and kind of shows the growth that we're seeing from her that, I do think is solidifying her as the backup center ahead of Lee related to that trade request. So I think the last thing I'd highlight with the Storm is, like, as much as I talked about the offense and their eighth in offensive rating, they're only sixth in defensive rating. I do think, probably if you look at relative to league average, they're probably going to come out a bit better than that. They're forcing a lot of turnovers. Their shot defense has been good. The problem is that they cannot get any defensive rebounds. They are 11th in defensive rebounding, and this was a big issue against Atlanta in that loss. It was a big issue against Dallas too, and it's something that they probably need to figure out if they are going to. Noel Quinn mentioned last week that the goal that the players set was to be top two in defense, which I didn't think was unrealistic at the time, given the defensive talent on this team. But they're not defending at that level right now, and if they are going to, be improved from last season, they're going to have to get to that level defensively. So we will see. The one thing I will mention on the Storm, and particularly in relation to Diggins and to a lesser degree Neko Gumake struggling in the last couple of games, is it has been a very busy start to the season thus far. They are about to get their longest break they've had since the opening week of the season. After beating Dallas on Tuesday night, they play at Phoenix on Saturday, and then not again until Wednesday against Minnesota. And one thing I am watching, we haven't yet seen, I gotta say, I haven't mentioned Erica Wheeler has been awesome. She has been a savior for the Storm. They were a totally different team with her on the court Tuesday night. She brings a level of dynamism and attacking and aggressiveness offensively that they don't have even with Skylar Diggins elsewhere in their starting lineup. Alicia Clark, it's been a tough start for her. She shot the ball reasonably well, but hasn't made the same defensive impact playing more on the perimeter. Whereas, last year in Las Vegas, she was primarily a four. That's just kind of a function of the fact that they drafted Malunga and not a guard with that number two pick. So she's out playing, the 2-3 alongside Gabby Williams in the starting lineup. I think it would probably make sense to start Erica Wheeler, put Clark back in a bench role where she's thrived in the past and see that. But the other thing I'm wondering about is, look, Malunga is promising enough, and you've got Neko Gumekane and Ezi Magbogor in the front court. At some point, we need to see the three of those players together, whether it's in a zone or however you make it work. I really want to see that. And I'm wondering if Wednesday against Minnesota is the time that we start to see it, because they'll have had a chance to work on it in practice for an extended period of time here after not having many practices lately. So stay tuned on that one. All right, let's wrap up with the Seattle Seahawks. OTAs continued this week with multiple practices open to the media, where people really, really went in depth on Sam Darnold's handful of red zone throws.
Are they bad?
They were not good.
Okay.
So,
That's usually how you judge the success of a quarterback over a full NFL season.
exactly. Like,
A handful of red zone throws.
there's a lot of possible reasons that it doesn't make sense, but it's sample size is the number one thing here. When you start talking about, a single OTA practice out of 10 that they have is compared to, like, 30, maybe 30 plus practices during training camp. Like, it doesn't tell you anything. So what are we doing here? Person who's not doing it is Mike McDonald, asked by Mike Salk appearing on Seattle Sports 710 whether there's anything that could happen besides injury to prevent Darnold from starting at quarterback. No, you guys are crazy. I respect that you've got to ask it, but it's just a crazy question. It's not just not going to happen. Sam's our starting quarterback. We love him. He's doing a tremendous job.
There we go.
I do file this under what else is he going to say? It is fascinating. Like,
No,
this
this
was.
is not filed under what else is he going to say? Sam Darnold is the starting quarterback. There, again, barring injury, Sam Darnold will be starting week one.
I'd say it's like 97% that he's starting week one if healthy.
97?
I would give it 3% chance. But also the funny thing is, like, Jalen Milroe didn't supposedly look very good at these OTAs that have been open to the media either.
I think people are getting a little bit confused about Jalen Milroe. And we
I
talked about
mean,
this on the
people are
draft
just
podcast.
comparing him to Russell Wilson. That's what's happening.
Jalen Milroe's college career does not resemble Russell Wilson's in any capacity.
Russell Wilson was literally nicknamed the asterisk by Football Outsiders, by Aaron Schatz back when in the Football Outsiders days, because he broke their projection model.
That is where, and I think the thing that's a little bit like, are we excited about Jalen Milroe? Of course. But we talked about this on the Jalen Milroe draft podcast. His numbers are not that good. Like, that is the hope that he's not that good of a runner. He's not that good of a passer. Like, Jalen Milroe wasn't that good of a quarterback in college. Is he exciting? Yes. Is that starting as a rookie? Abso-fucking-lutely not, especially not after you paid a quarterback like Sam Darnold. Like, the Russell Wilson thing was predictable to a certain extent.
Yes,
And
to a certain extent, being the keywords there, but Matt Flynn didn't make the money that Sam Darnold did. Matt Flynn had not started, multiple entire seasons and for a playoff team as Sam Darnold did last season, and Jalen Milroe was not the prospect that Russell Wilson is. And people are like just seeing these two similar things and making them the same thing.
I would guess if you looked at the most similar prospects to Jalen Milroe, do you want to know what they are?
I mean,
Not in the NFL
yeah, I
is
was
what they
just
are.
saying, are we going optimistic here or pessimistic?
I mean, again, I'm excited about Jalen Milroe. It is like the hope is that he develops into a quarterback that can be in his place. But again, and maybe this is why John Schneider just bowed out on drafting quarterbacks for like a generation. Where he was like, you know what? This shit is actually so annoying. And maybe that's why they're going to get Jalen Milroe on the field. Sam Darnold's the quarterback. 97% is not a high enough percentage because we're talking him being benched. Also, Jalen Milroe is the third string quarterback right now. It would be Drew Lock who is the one who would take
the
job.
Well, I didn't necessarily say Jalen Milroe. I just said 97% chance that Sam Darnold is the starting quarterback. I think
But you were
you
like, it's funny because also Jalen Milroe hasn't looked that good in these
Well,
practices.
when other people are doing this, they're talking about Jalen Milroe.
Yes.
I'm
Other
accounting
people
for
aren't
all
talking about Drew
possibilities.
Lock. Look, maybe the Giants backup will take the job from Sam Darnold.
I mean, let's be clear here. Sam Darnold has been a backup not too long ago himself.
Sam Darnold has spent more time as a starter than a backup. He's 14-3 last year. I'm so sorry. People are just like, they've gotten out of their fucking minds with Sam Darnold.
I think people have gotten out of their fucking minds in general, I would say. I do think it's kind of funny that, like, I mean, maybe it's just that you would never ask Mike McDonald, hey, is Julian Love going to be a starting safety this year? Because it's just not a question in the same way. But, like, it is interesting to me that, you know, Pete Carroll, and I think the defense certainly observed this, Pete Carroll believed in competition so much at 21 positions, or however you want to count with the nickel and multiple wide receiver players, cared so much at most of them. And then at one position, it was like, no, this is the guy. And I get why it happens, because A, they're most the most important player in the field, and B,
do
there
you
is
agree
such
with
a
that
media
though? Because
focus.
he believed in competition when it was Matt Flynn and Russell Wilson.
Yes, and when it was, you know, Charlie Whitehurst and Matt Hasselbeck, etc.
So I don't know if I fully agree with that. It's more like, once you have the guy at quarterback, he's the guy at quarterback. So I think Pete would have answered the question the exact same way that Mike McDonald did.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. I think it is consistent with, but this is someone who talked about always compete. And then there was one position where it was a little bit different. So, but it's a little different for a reason. Sam Darnold is overwhelmingly likely to be the Seahawks starting quarterback, and a handful of throws at an OTA in June are not going to tell us anything about
I mean,
that.
I think people, like other players on the Seahawks, who I grant maybe were more important players during a certain time period for the Seahawks. I think part of their frustration with the Seahawks at the time and Pete Carroll was how much he wouldn't criticize Russell Wilson. And it's like, no fucking shit he wouldn't criticize Russell Wilson. Do you want to know who's going to outlast all of you players? It's going to be the quarterback. There is a reality.
I mean, he
did
outlast
to
all
this.
The players. He did not outlast Pete Carroll, as it turned out.
He did not outlast Pete Carroll and Bobby Wagner. Granted, like, Bobby was around for a very, very long time.
But also,
right now, people are asking him, like, is Aiden O'Connell pushing Geno?
Technically, did not. Bobby Wagner did outlast Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
by like
sort
3 hours. Okay.
I've never heard of Cam Miller, but you know,
well,
always compete. Anyway, it's a stupid question. There's nothing to talk about.
It's not a stupid question. I think it is good to get the coach on the record.
Is it? For what? For who? Yeah. For what?
I mean, first off, for the talking points, but second off, I think it's good to have people on the record about things. That's my position as a journalist. It's good to have people on the record about things. And we are on the record with all of this.
Wow.
Except for the parts I took out.
Except for the numerous parts you took out.
But you never know. Maybe they'll come back in. Who knows?
No, they better not.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks. All right, here with more on Saturday's Mariners game is our special correspondent who went with me to the game. It's Luca.
Hi.
Hi, welcome back to the pod. I don't know that we're going to name school mascots this time. Wow,
you had no response for that.
Dynamite podcast.
Stumped it with this line of reasoning.
Dynamite podcast. All right, well, main reason I wanted to have you here was to talk about the food that we had at Saturday's game, Luca. But any takeaways on the Mariners' performance, which you saw on the field?
Cole Young is the future.
There you go. Okay. Cal Raleigh is the present. Cole Young is the future. Cole Young is the timeline? I don't know. Gabby Williams is the timeline. So before the game, early in the game, actually, to be more accurate, I got you Ivers, and then I picked up the J. Kenji Lopez alt teriyaki that is available is a grab and go from the Mariners walk-off locations on the some of the Mariners walk-off locations on the 100 level. Look at your review of Ivers.
It was really good. I liked the fish and I liked the fries, and I want it again.
Those are the two key parts of it, I would say, without question, the fish and the chips. So, what was the name of our Ivers podcast again? Can't keep clam. So this is also a crossover edition of that podcast here. So the
People
teriyaki.
are always like, "Why don't you have guests on the podcast?" And then the guests come on and then just make faces at themselves on Zoom
It
or
really is quite
BT,
true.
and they're just like, "Yeah, it's okay, sir." It's not that official. It's just like you're talking to Uncle Al.
We had a
Are we
conversation throughout the
recording?
entire Mariners game.
You were talking shit about him in the car right after.
Oh, what? Wait, what were you saying? Hold on.
Wait, what was I saying?
You were complaining about he was sitting during
Oh
the.
yeah, what weird. I was out there grinding, trying to catch a hot dog from heaven, and you were in your chair looking at the Pacers Thunder game.
That is accurate, but when the but this is spoiling what we're getting to later on. And I do feel like I ended up getting my hand on it, so I don't feel like I was. I feel like I was competing, even if it was not necessarily my hardest. But
No, I did all the work. You secured it on the way down, but I caught that hot dog and you had to eat it still. I don't know what I'm saying.
okay, so this was the high point of the game, was the hot dogs for heaven segment. I think I had been at a game where it happened last year. You had been at games where the hot dogs from heaven happened, right, Luca?
Yeah.
But it never caught one. And we were like right by where the people were throwing them. It seemed almost inevitable
Stop
that we were going
blowing
to
into the
catch
microphone. What the fuck are you doing?
one.
I swear to God, you can't act normal. I had to turn up the video because you kept making faces at yourself in video. Just a nod. What was the other shit that you were talking about? He did say, I will say on this, Kevin, he said you got the perfect amount of ketchup and tartar sauce. Is that
Yes,
right?
I did. It
I mean,
was absolutely perfect.
I didn't have anything to do with the tartar sauce. They just handed me the two cups, which is what Luca had originally requested. But the ketchup, I did have to precisely measure out because it was a pump ke ketchup
Why are
situation.
you
Pump it.
whistling into the microphone and blowing into the microphone? This is the craziest thing. Every week I'm podcasting, you're like, can I be on the podcast? And I'm like, no. And then you get your one chance, and what you decide to do is blow into the microphone. This is why I say no. I'm gonna have Mateo come in instead.
I was gonna say
He's gonna go on a
that's the
rant.
real threat is to bring on Tay from the bullpen.
Get angry and take the cover off the mic, start hitting it.
So let's talk about the teriyaki though a little bit. So I would say one of the interesting things I think that Kenji probably had the most influence on the sauce, and that is like a very classic Seattle style sauce. I would say a little less viscous than I prefer, but I prefer a I don't know, I forget which one is the more viscous. Which one is that? Which one? I prefer a thicker teriyaki sauce, as we know from the viscous sweet Nexus. That is my preference. But a very strong Seattle style teriyaki sauce. I would say one of the interesting things is like, as far as the chicken itself, it was cut up a little smaller than you get with authentic Seattle style teriyaki. It's more like when you get a non-Seattle style teriyaki bowl, I would say, particularly, kind of like if you think of the size that you would get at something from Trader Joe's or some sort of frozen product like that.
A
So
smaller
that's,
one. It was like cut up smaller, or the actual like bowl was smaller.
I mean, the bowl wasn't enormous, it's the Mariners, but it's a ballpark food. But the pieces of chicken themselves were smaller than, traditionally you get the thigh is just sliced lengthwise that you're getting, right? That's what you think
Yeah,
of as
and they
classic.
didn't do that. They were cut into smaller pieces.
No, yeah. So that was an area where, like, look, it's just the realities of you're getting teriyaki in a ballpark.
Do you
So
feel like it was sub neighborhood teriyaki?
overall, I would say yes. And that's as someone who had the neighborhood go to teriyaki spot for me,
How much was it, by the way?
new teriyaki and wok twice last week. So I was on quite the teriyaki kick between that and this.
I want to go right now. I haven't had teriyaki in like, I don't even know, 9 months or something.
I believe it was 1995.
That was the last time you went and had teriyaki? It is not the season of record, unfortunately. An important season. It costs 1995.
I believe that's what it costs.
The Mariners should price all things. That's what they should have done to honor Randy Johnson. Oh my God. They should make the pricing on items something and 51 cents.
Well, that actually is a legitimately great idea.
Or whatever his height is, right? He's like 6 foot.
I believe 6'11".
6'11"? They should price items like Randy Johnson pricing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
This is a genius idea. There's every better idea. What are your thoughts on retiring numbers that are already retired?
You can do that.
The Mariners did.
How?
They're retiring Randy Johnson's number after retiring Ichiro's number.
What do you mean?
So they're going to retire it for Ichiro this summer, and I believe August. And then next summer, they will also retire number 51 again for Randy Johnson.
Oh, you can't do that.
You can. You very much can.
Are they going to put 251s on the little plate things?
Yes. Yes, they will. Just as the Blazers do, in fact,
Lucas
have
seems
230
bothered
jerseys.
His.
All right, well.
I swear you had other things that you were making fun of him for.
The car
I can't remember what it was you were saying in the car, but I was loving it.
I'm sure you were.
This is podcast material.
I actually said this is too good of podcast material that we've completely forgotten since then.
Well, I'm going to have to consider this the next time I have a free ticket to the Mariners game.
Do you have any thoughts you listened to since you're here? We deigned to have you on
well,
the podcast.
But we didn't really complete the Hot Dogs from Heaven story. So,
oh, okay.
Luca, you want to tell it from your perspective here?
So they started letting go of the hot dogs, and I almost caught the first one, but the girl next to me took it. So I had it in my hand, but she took the hot dog part.
I didn't think Luca had that dog in him on that first hot dog. I didn't think he wanted it more.
Well, clearly you didn't want it more, busy thunder. And then there was a bunch next to me, and then after I caught one, there was this old guy next to us, and he was like, "Why are they carrying hot dogs?" And then I'm assuming daughter, maybe granddaughter, was like, "They just put hot dogs from the sky. It's called Hot Dogs from Heaven." And then he was like, "Let me see this young man." And then he just took the like parachute that it came down in, and he started just feeling around it and looking at it. And he was like, "Very cool, young man."
This is after you caught one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the second one, there was a second one that came towards us, and Luca, as he said, did get it up high. I got it down low. We combined to get the hot dog from heaven, and Luca, as he said, could not eat the hot dog for allergen reasons. So
were you pissed about that?
Yeah, I did all the work.
You wanted that hot dog bad?
Absolutely.
But he did get to save the hot dog from heaven parachute, so he got something out of the deal.
Yeah, I didn't get the food, but I did get a parachute.
Which you still have at home, correct?
I do still have it.
It's a high-quality parachute. We got to give them credit. They cooked on this one, literally.
What is your most prized item? The millions rings that you have, the shirt that you won over the weekend, or that parachute from the Mariners game?
Absolutely the parachute. I have 12 rings, a shirt that I won this weekend for winning a league, and the parachute's still better.
Of course.
The parachute, that's work that I did individually. I have a team for baseball. I did all the work right there. That's mine.
Well, I just said that I did some of the work. But I haven't eaten a hot dog in a long period of time. I can't tell you the last time. It was definitely not in calendar 25 the last year. I had a hot dog. And you know what? The hot dog from heaven, it kind of surprisingly hit. Could have used some cream cheese.
With Luca right here.
I'm sorry, Luca.
That's great for you.
You got the Ivers. You got what you wanted out of the day.
You got teriyaki.
I probably still needed the hot dog to fill me up, if we're being honest.
Okay. What if I needed the hot dog to fill me up?
You should have told me to get you another round of Ivers.
I was about to, but I was thinking that I shouldn't, because he probably wouldn't have gotten it for me.
Would you have gotten it?
Of course I would have gotten it, but...
Next time
he's not me. You ask him for everything.
Next time we're at the
Mariners, I would have been like, suck it up. But
I mean, maybe
next
not
next time
now
we're at the Mariners game, I'm asking you for rounds after rounds of Ivers. I'm gonna need every inning Ivers.
You're treating it as the Diamond Club of Ivers.
Yes.
You know, you're continuing to make me second guess bringing you to the next time I have a game.
No.
I have a free
no.
What is this ridiculous scenario that would ever happen again?
I mean, it's not that improbable a scenario.
It's happened one time ever, and you're like, but the next time this happens.
Next time your wife's friends don't have tickets, so they give you tickets, and you take your, wait, what am I now?
You're my nephew.
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 Or godson. And
you take your nephew.
Yeah, well, now that I know
you
it's
said it was Gonzaga night at the ballpark.
Mm-hmm. It was Gonzaga night. The president of the school threw out the first pitch, and then they played the sandstorm intro that they love to do at the Gonzaga games. So
I learned that they have this chant with the, it's called Let's Go GU or something. I forgot what it was now.
It is to Sandstorm by Darude.
Yeah, you don't know this. Adam Morrison threw out the first pitch, you said?
No, the school president threw out the first pitch. Not nearly that as exciting. There were no Gonzaga basketball players in attendance that I saw, but we were surrounded by Gonzaga fans. So
we're in the Gonzaga section. There was a lot of them next to us, but they all seemed pretty pleasant, which I was a little surprised by.
So everybody around you had that dog in him, Luca or the Huskies and Gonzaga. So that's why you had to compete for the hot dog.
The person next to us also was a former, I don't know if they're alum, but a former UW season ticket holder. And so I don't know if you saw about this. There was a brief delay in this game because the fire alarms were going off, which we couldn't hear anything, but the lights were flashing throughout the stadium.
If you went into the area where you get food in the bathrooms, it was really loud. They had this alarm. It was like, woo.
Okay. So you did hear it when you went to the bathroom. So there was a bit of a delay in the game before they were able to like just turn off the alarm system entirely so that hitters could hit. And the person next to us was referencing the UW Cal game that was delayed by thunderstorm, and I got to like, I was there. So there you go.
Luca, how many other children's baseball players did you see?
I think three.
From?
I saw one from New Level and two from Seattle Select.
Hmm. That's like the number one thing that Luca tracks when he goes to a baseball game.
Do you think the listeners are big fans of New Level or Seattle Select?
The listener is big fans of your team, Luca. It's big fans. They're big fans of Rock Creek.
Wow, that's cool.
They actually aren't.
Oh, we should invite them all out to a game.
Pelton Cast Night at Rock Creek. Let's go.
How did your weekend go? Do you want to get a review of your performance this weekend?
We only played two games because the first game the other team forfeit. They were scared. And in the first game, I threw a complete game and hit a double off the wall. And then in the next game, I hit a homer.
Nice.
It was like borderline would have been Maddox territory, right? Because it was a complete 61 game.
61 pitches.
Six innings, 61 pitches.
Wow. That is efficiency.
And then 9 Ks and only one earned run. My defense was telling me I had 4 runs and only one was earned.
How many balls do you think Tarik Skubal threw in the complete game?
I also only threw 9 balls the entire game.
Wow. There you go.
Dotting outside corner.
All right. Well, Luca, congrats on the league championship and congrats on the bigger accomplishment last weekend, getting the hot dog from heaven. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it.
Wow. Skubal has, is it this season? You had more walks in one game than he has all year in the bad game that you played.
What?
He has 7 walks all year.
No, I haven't had 7 walks. I had 7 walks from one game. That's tied.
Well, you've walked other people since then.
I've also thrown more innings than him. He's allowed 9 homers. No, he's 11 walks. Look, he's 11 walks. Oh, is that this year?
This is this year.
Oh, he's thrown a lot more.
Well, you're worse than Skubal.
Shocking. He has more hit by pitches than me, though.
That's good. You're not hitting anybody.
I haven't hit anyone. I had a streak, like a 3-year streak where I didn't hit anybody. And then I hit 3 people in one game.
Wow, those walks per nine are insane, 0.83. Anyway, I felt like it was kind of like borderline Maddox level, 61 pitches in 6 innings.
No, that's very impressive.
And in center field was the pitching coach watching me. So how about that?
It was in front of Dave Wainhouse.
Oh, there you go. Mariners legend, Dave Wainhouse.
Yep. Sitting in his chair wearing an insane amount of clothes considering how hot it was. Multiple layers of hoodies.
Definitely updates we need on the pod.
Every time I threw a good pitch.
Love it. Okay, well.
His FIP is 1.88. Yeah, he's a listener for sure, Dave.
Awesome.
Congrats on the weekend, Luca.
Thank you, Miss Fountain.
I think we should just be like constantly tinkering with Pelton Cast from the past.
Oh, okay. Like the Star Wars original trilogy re-releases? Or...
Yeah. Yeah. That's
people
what we
were very
doing.
Upset about that, right? You actually received a message about it on your school paper, as I recall.
Incorrectly, yes. He did say it's like Guido shooting first.
And it's Greedo, correct?
Yeah, no, he didn't understand the reference.
Or just understand, or maybe he actually really did understand the reference to be anti-Italian slander. So you can never really tell if it's one or the other. But given that it was a teenager in high school, probably more likely didn't understand. So,
Are you aware that the Switch 2 comes out today?
I am aware of this solely because of the Discord and the very
active are people in the Discord talking about it?
Gaming channel, which I understand approximately 10% of. But I see it because I keep an eye on everything, even the channels that I don't really are not really topics of interest to me.
The reference was to a movie. This is to date when this happened, which is now, of course, 24 years ago. What you're talking about?
Yeah.
Feels just like it was yesterday.
Doesn't it?
In the movie Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, they say like that would be the worst idea since Greedo shooting first.
Right.
And the person was who
quoting that
wrote it to me was trying to quote that,
correct,
did not understand the reference that they were making in the movie. Because again, they were like a dumb 14-year-old. This is Thai high school education.
Or did understand it, but just for like, you know, forgot the specific name. I can believe that part of it.
I do not believe that part of it. You don't, if you either know or you don't know. You're not like, what was the name? Greedo? Like, you either get what they're talking about or you don't get what they're talking about. And I don't blame this 14-year-old for not understanding Star Wars lore well enough to have quoted it back correctly after. That's not a criticism.
Yeah.
The criticism is that they tried to do it, but did it wrong.
There's so many times I feel like that on social media. It's not like, it's not bad for you to not understand the salary cap thing. It's bad for you to be trying to correct me when you don't understand the salary cap thing.
Yes.
You come at the king, you best not miss.
Wow.
I'm not the king. Bobby is the king, for the record.
Finally, ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton tells it like it is.
Stop being
aggregate
polite.
That motherfuckers.
Oh no, please do not.
Anyway,
please do
come
not.
At the king, you best not.
You know, I worked a wire quote into my story earlier this week.
Did you really? And that also, see, this is what I was saying about a reference from 2001 is a timely reference. So that's good.
I try to keep it nothing but timely. Seinfeld.
I mean, we're
and
also
the
talking
Wire
Greedo
only.
Shooting First, which is from a movie from 1977 and but remastered
weirdly,
in like 1997, something
weirdly
like that.
Still in the news today.
Yeah.
In Did we ever news. Do our Andor pod?
No.
Do you still want to, or is it not fresh enough now?
No, it's as old as The Wire.
Okay.
The Andor pod? Come on. I'm watching Star Wars The Clone Wars right now.
Oh, nice.
I'm still on Star Wars. Don't get me wrong. I have all sorts of timely TV references. I think that Seinfeld season 3 is the best Seinfeld season, is what I've determined.
I did attempt to make a Seinfeld reference to Luca at the game on Saturday to bring us full circle.
Wow, what did
told
you
him
say?
That he should watch. I've
like,
now
yeah,
forgotten what
you're
it
like,
was.
The hot dogs are coming down from heaven, yada, yada, yada. I'm eating a hot dog.
No, it was a more specific Seinfeld reference than that to something that occurred during the game.
I want to know what it was.
It's lost to history.
I'm so impressed
maybe,
with
or maybe
people's
Luca
Seinfeld
remembers
references.
It.
Randy obviously had his Seinfeld reference about his Summer of George. And then a friend was talking about how in a baseball, did I tell you this? That there was a baseball game that we were at a couple weekends ago. And did we talk about this on the podcast already?
Possibly so.
I don't think so, but the shortstop made a great play and just ran off.
Yeah, we talked about it.
That was
but
on the podcast.
We're constantly tinkering with podcasts, so maybe it's going to disappear by the time people listen to this.
That'll be gone. We're editing it to just this. I'm going to change the story now. It was the fourth out.
Oh, no.
People seem to, I somebody was talking at Coach's Corner, and I was like, Coach's Corner is dead.
Long live. Well, it was a joke. You got the joke, right?
No, what was the joke?
That someone had been harassing an umpire or something like that, a manager on the other team. Someone was like, wow, it was a crazy event at U Sports. The other manager of the other team was like, horrible. And the joke was that you
that I was
were
the
the
manager. No,
manager.
I didn't see all that.
That was the context. Did
That's
you miss it on
actually
the Discord?
really funny.
Yes.
We had the flag football Super Bowl this weekend. Well, actually, we lost in the championship game. I guess
The conference championship, you're
we were
saying?
playing the Ravens. So Bills Ravens would have been the AFC championship game. It did not go well. There were many tears.
Oh, no. How many of them were yours?
None. I was fine the whole time. I wanted to lose. That was like, I think I mentioned that in the Discord.
That you wanted to get out to
yeah,
Lucas
Noah's thing
team.
Where he's like, I'm like constantly cheering against the team just so I could go home or whatever. And I was like, I got other base. Luca was pitching. I was like, I got to get out of here. I don't want to watch another fucking flag football game.
The two flag football seasons per year does seem like a lot.
I think we might be retiring from flag football.
Oh.
I mean, it's fine, but like, I'm going to sound like such a crazy person saying this, and everybody's going to disagree with me. Playing flag football is just for fun. And it's kind of like there's no long-term thing to do with flag football.
Wow, Noah's going to dislike this take.
Does that make sense? Like, no, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like, this is the exact, don't tell the Malcolm Gladwell police on me. But like...
flag football is not yet currently a sanctioned high school level sport.
Well, I'm not saying that like the whatever we're going to be, you know, like Mateo's going to be playing professional baseball and that's why we're doing this. It's more just like there's like places to go next. Yeah, there's like more to do after this. And same with basketball. Like we can start like keep playing rec basketball or start like a select basketball team or whatever and keep doing that and grow. And you could play in middle school and play in high school and those things. Flag football, they play tackle football in middle school. So like we're not going to be doing that. Yeah.
Oh, Highline School District was flag football, right?
No, I think they've been for a long time, but in Kent they're playing tackle football. Also, there was some child who injured his back this weekend where I was just like, Luke was showing it to me and I was like, that's why you're not playing football.
Yeah.
I was like, if you've just listened to this, I'm so sorry that you've listened this long. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.